All right, welcome to the monthly Edgewalker teleconference. This is March 22nd, 2012, and we're going to begin with a check-in. So say your name, where you're from, and anything else that you want to say as a brief check-in.
Well, I'm Ellis, and I'm here in Fayetteville with my spouse, Judy.
Wait,
thank
I didn't
God
hear
for
you.
That.
Wait, say that again.
I am Ellis, and I'm here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, with my spouse, Judy.
You know, I just realized last time that you're married now, right?
Yes, right.
Okay. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you, Fran.
This is Eric in Toronto. I'm not married to Judy, and I've known her for 15 years or close to, and really appreciate a soulful place to be this evening. So it feels like a community of the heart. So grateful for whatever happens and for your continuing to plant seeds, Judy, for as many years as you have.
Oh, thank you, Eric.
Well, I'm Fran Levin. I live in Abingdon, Virginia. And I don't know how many years I met Judy when she was just starting.
Wow.
I think that's
yeah.
What was
that's
happening.
About 20 years, Fran, I think.
No kidding. Is it that long? Wow.
Yeah. I think it's been about that long. Uh-huh. Oh, well, welcome. I'm going to begin with a quote that is titled, A Hopi Elder Speaks. And the reason I chose this is kind of right in the middle of it, there's a phrase that says, know your garden. And our topic tonight is about planting seeds, and we're looking at the fact that it's spring and that new life is emerging and that we all have a garden to plant, and at least those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, this is relevant for us. And so I thought that this quote might give us something to start our conversation around. A Hopi elder speaks. You have been telling the people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go back and tell the people that this is the hour, and there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relation? Where is your water? Know your garden. It is time to speak your truth. Create your community, be good to each other, and do not look outside yourself for the leader. Then he clasped his hands together, smiled, and said, this could be a good time. There is a river flowing now very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel they are being torn apart and will suffer greatly. Know the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above the water. And I say, see who is in there with you and celebrate. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth and journey comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we've been waiting for. Urubai, Arizona, Hopi Nation. So I invite us tonight to think about the kinds of seeds that we each are planting in our lives and what kind of garden it is that we envision for ourselves and for our community and for our world. And what are we doing to make that garden grow? What kind of help do we need? What is it that we can't see that maybe others on the call may have some perceptions or resources or thoughts about? And just to have that be our starting point for the conversation. And then wherever we go is where we go. So the space is open.
Well, I guess I might begin. It's Eric in Toronto. Two things that came to mind with your reading, Judy. First, I just love that selection. And it's such a rich and inspiring piece to me, and a reminder not to look outside, but to really trust, have faith in my own work and gifts and worth and planting, and not to take it personally, which I am always challenged by.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is reading the review of look at your garden, look at your community, look at what you're doing. I just...
Excuse me, would you talk louder?
Sure. Say, I'll go a little closer to my mic as well. I was saying as the description of look at the parts of your life was being read, I felt very much in harmony with all the parts. And it feels to me as though I'm... doing the work and building the community and or being part of healing the relationships, that those things feel very much in harmony for me right now and growing more so. So it was a good check-in.
Thank you. Can you give us... I know you to be a healer, and I'm wondering if you can give us like one example of something that you're doing that others might want to emulate or might want to ask you questions about and learn more about in terms of the work that you're doing with others.
I guess there are three calls in my life. One is the developing my expression of spirit and God in the world, and something that I've been monumentally challenged by in my life and continue to make strides in. Second is I do energetic relaxation and healing work and really do that through prayer and work in consciousness as well. So it's one that calls me. And a third is a piece I left behind about 30 years ago, which was active work in the environmental field. I was a pioneer in waste recycling in Canada, and I just had a healing in my life where I did my first talk in 30 years back to my alma mater in University of Waterloo in Ontario, talking about a major program we had started back in the early 80s that spread across the country and around the world called the Blue Box Recycling Program. And for me, it was a going back to a time where I'd had a split in my life between inner and outer work, and I had finally come to a place of joining and connecting the circle and being able to understand why I stepped out into the world past that, which was to go to the deeper roots of what I felt was the source and the driver of environmental problems, social problems, and connected with the spiritual piece and the need to heal within. So it was the first time I've ever first time in 30 years I've been able to talk about it and bring the pieces together. So it felt very much like a healing time of contributing to where people are right now in making change, but wanting to provide insights at a deeper level of both the success of that program as well as the work that I've been doing for the last 30 years and how they might integrate. So it was a major coming forth for me and stepping forth back into a part of community that I left behind for 30 years. So.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm glad I asked. Right now I'm in the middle of editing chapters for my next book, which is called The Handbook for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace. And today I've been editing a chapter submitted by this couple at the University of Tennessee who do a lot of work on sustainability and spirituality. And your words are almost like the words of their article. It's just so resonant. And they're talking about sustainable organizations, and they make a very strong case that you cannot have sustainability without a shift in consciousness that's a spiritual shift. And that shift is one to seeing the earth and her peoples and life as sacred. And until you have that shift, nothing is really going to make a difference in organizations. And so there's just such a huge, strong tie. I guess I would say one more thing that ties to the reading that I did tonight. And I hadn't seen the connection before. But they start their article by talking about the myth of the green man, which I had not heard before. But the green man is a child of the earth mother and the universe. And the green man returns to earth periodically when we forget mother earth and the life, the universal life force. And so when things are in harmony and peace and we're taking care of the planet, there's no need for the green man. But this is a time where we've forgotten our deeper spiritual connections. And so in the article, they talk about how the green man is really making his presence known, and in particular in organizations, because they're so powerful and they have the potential to do so much damage. So it really fits with this coming together that you're talking about too. Part of a greater coming together.
Thanks for sharing that.
This is Fran. I was listening to a program tonight, or I'm connected, I guess, to a lot of visionary teleseminars, and this one, the program they called today, Birth 2012, the birth of a new consciousness, and it will. This is Conception Day, as a matter of fact.
I saw something about that website. Yeah, tell us more.
Yeah, birth2012.com. So this is Conception Day, and the new birth is happening December 22nd, 9 months from today. And so there are, if you register, I just listened to part of a program today where they were talking about a new university where they will be teaching really amazing things on sustainability and people helping each other and caring for each other, caring for the earth. I mean, it's just a whole new paradigm. Preparing for what they see as a new consciousness, this is a new way of looking at the Mayan prediction of, that the earth will... something will happen in 2012, that the earth will disappear or something. But it's not the end of the world, but it's the end of the world as we know it. And so this is coming to a new consciousness, a new way of living in the world. So anyway, just check out, there are there's something else happening at 10 o'clock my time tonight, but there'll be replays available for all of this stuff. So all of these things are happening, and I'm trying to tell everyone to get in, you know, to at least listen to it and think about what it is we can do to make those changes come about.
Like, what seed can we plant, or how can we hoe the garden and do our part to make it grow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Fran, could you, two people just joined the call. Could you say the name of the program again and the website in case
yes.
they want to pick up on that?
It's birth2012.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And anyone can register, and there'll be playbacks for, I'm sure, for a while. But it's
and
just
Eric,
starting.
Is that the same program you were talking about with Barbara Marks Hubbard, or is that
same
yes.
different? Yep.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Reception day,
right.
Birthday. Yep. 10 o'clock tonight in Eastern.
Yeah.
Daylight time.
That's right.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you. For those who just joined us, what we're talking about is the concept of planting seeds at this particular time on the planet when there seems to be such a major shift occurring, and if we want to contribute to the positive side of the shift, what is it that we're doing in our own lives? What seeds are we planting? What do we need to help our own gardens grow? We're using spring metaphors for talking about our lives and our work, and both what we can see and also what we can't see but we sense wants to emerge. And spring is such a time of fast emergence. I mean, every day life seems to just explode. And so, you know, what is it that we are experiencing around that kind of rapid growth? And, you know, so those are just a bunch of the kinds of questions that we're exploring. I think what I'd like to share a little bit, I mentioned about my handbook, and as I think about what seeds I'm planting, the handbook for me is one of them. This is a collection of edited articles from the leading researchers and thinkers in the field. And I'm doing this, there's a section on what each of the religious traditions has to tell us about the workplace. There's a section on what some different fields of thought, like sociology or psychology or different kinds of science, accounting, you know, what different professional fields, law, what's emerging in these different fields around the integration of spirituality and work. There's essays from the elders in the field who may no longer be doing research, but who have so much wisdom to look at the past, present, and future. And so this feels like I'm planting a garden by having invited about 50 different people around the world to contribute their articles. And I'm in the process now of receiving those articles and reading them. And I'm just stunned at the beauty of each one. It's kind of like seeing the sprouts come up from the soil and the first little bits of flower and flowering. And I'm amazed that even though the articles are research-oriented, they're very academic, they're full of poetry and metaphors and inspirational. And I'm just so excited about the work people are doing. And it feels like such a privilege to have essentially dug up the ground and planted some rows and then invited people to bring their own seeds, basically, and, you know, help grow this collective garden. So that's one of the things I'm really energized about right now in terms of my own planting seeds.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, thanks. Mm-hmm. Who else would like to check in? or not check in. We've checked in, but responding to the question.
Well, this is Joy, and I'm one of the people that just logged on.
Hi, Joy. And
yeah,
Joy
hello.
Is in Arkansas.
Yes, thank you. I recognize in the last few weeks, I've, without even seeing the connection to our conversation tonight, have been using the word planting seeds with my clients in terms of doing the energetic work I'm doing. And part of it is like as I'm able to connect with, let's say, like sometimes when I'm working, I connect with the pure qualities in its pure energetic form, like whether it's the quality of trust or hope or something along those lines that my client's needing, and maybe or maybe not they might be able to access it in that moment, but I feel like in doing that work I'm planting seeds for that as their readiness opens, they have that line of connection, if that makes sense. So I feel, yeah, like on an energetic level with each of my clients, help planting the seeds for what they're moving into or what they're awakening to.
Wow, that is beautiful, Joy. Yeah, thank you. Eric, you weren't on when Eric was sharing that he's has been for a long time and is doing energetic healing work too. So I would imagine he can very much relate to the way you're describing your work as well.
Amen.
Thank you. Yeah.
Right. Joy, anything else that you want to share?
Yeah, I'll let it sprout in front of us in the next few minutes.
All right, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll sit with it and feel what else wants to come out.
Okay. Yeah. Who else would like to share? And actually, it's really fine for us to take some moments of silence in between. That allows things to emerge and grow, too. So why don't we do that? We'll take a moment of silence, and then when someone's ready, go ahead and share whatever emerges for you.
I guess this is Joy again. One, not recognizing this as a seed, but in the silence and in listening to you doing so, a lot of times when I'm doing my healing work and empowering or educating my clients, the thought comes to me often is, like, why aren't we taught this through our primary education? Like, why aren't students taught about their own energy body or understanding all of the aspects of who they are versus just a lot of the mental work that we do in school? So I have this longing and a craving for us to have access to this information that's accessible. So maybe every when I mention that or say that to my clients out loud, like I'm tilling the soil for that, like so that we can empower and put more tools in the hands of children about learning to understand their own emotional body, their own energy body, the power of their dreams, that the whole just soulful side of them, that it's more attainable, allowed to be discussed and talked about and given format, that it's giving them tangible languaging. And I think it's possible. I feel like I raised my kids knowing that information and just feel like more people should have access to it, or that it's that it can blossom as a whole in our culture as accepted and valid. And
I think this is something that was talked about on the Birth 2012 call today, about a new way of education. They talked about a new university that's being formed, or maybe not a university, but a school, where that is much more, that teaches much more along those lines.
Yeah,
in other words, in terms of creating a whole new, new culture, a whole new way of thinking.
Right, and even teaching teachers a whole new culture of helping them to even recognize maybe where they're projecting or transferring onto their own students, and how to learn, like how to even make their teaching a learning path for their own soul, and how to just empower their students to access their wholeness. And sometimes when I think about it, like I think about getting into like the local schools here and just teaching teachers. I know that sometimes they have in-service school days, and helping them to understand all the ways they can empower or disempower students, and that's a lot more than just the test taking. Putting tools in the teacher's hands.
And just to empower the teachers to know that that's a part of who they are.
Yeah.
You can't teach what you don't already have access to.
Right, yeah.
So it'd be a beautiful way to start.
Yeah, it feels like you have to start with the teachers that are teaching and have compassion for, I mean, I have a lot of compassion. I have one of my dear friends is a teacher at 7th grade here at Holton. She works like 12-hour days, and, you know, she shares with me some of the questions and the yearning or the searching that the students come up to her with. And, if we can help empower those teachers to have, I mean, I think she's doing a wonderful job of trying to address each of the students and help more teachers offer that to their students or empower them to be able to handle those tough subjects of identity and sexuality.
Joy, do you know Linda Jones?
No.
She's a faculty member at the University of Arkansas and very active in St. Paul's. She's actually, you might know her for the bagpipe playing. She's definitely an edgewalker.
Yeah, I might recognize her, right.
Yeah. She's got a passion for bringing spirituality into K through 12 and is exploring some grants and programs. And if you'll remind me, I should introduce you to her because there's some way that you could work together.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, it would be awesome.
Oh,
so thanks,
Judy,
for planting those seeds. Go ahead, Eric. Oh, no, that wasn't Eric. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Judy. This is Amit. I just logged in pretty late, and I was just listening to all your conversations.
Hi, Amit. Good to have you with us.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing just fine. Hello to everybody. And, I just wanted to share something, on this line of teaching and education. There's a publication there called American Educator, and they have a website called AFT. You can take a look at it. It's actually an awesome website, and a lot of people who have backgrounds in research and also in education actually put in high-class articles in these magazines, and it's phenomenal. I haven't come across anything like this, which is so thoughtfully put together, especially for the field of education. And their spring publication, actually, these articles are also publicly, you can access them on the web. They are at www.aft.org. So their spring publication has a beautiful article done by a professor at University of Virginia. It says, Why Does Family Wealth Affect Learning? And it has a very cognitive scientist approach to it. And it's worth reading. But the most important thing it sort of brings up onto the surface is the conversation around household wealth. And I find that pretty interesting because wealth is generally tied, into how much is your income, but it's a little bit more far-reaching from that standpoint. And the way it sort of builds up is very interesting to sort of analyze and see, you know, children who really perform well in school or in early part of their life, how much instrumental are their parents in terms of putting up a sort of a play around the education piece that really goes for the students to learn and participate in the learning process and understand the investment that really goes behind that, you know, in order to make a successful student, as to say. But there's much more to it. I think if everybody could take a glance into it, it'll just help. I also, you know, when I read this, I was very excited. Actually, my wife subscribes to this magazine. I don't. She's a professor at Rutgers. So I get to read these magazines, but they're very informative. They also have articles which actually are along the lines of, you know, how does a human being sort of learn things, and is learning or education or our classrooms today really the way really the brain wants to understand and learn things from. So these are interesting topics. There's also one more article I wanted to sort of bring up today because I collect these magazines. There was an article done in the spring of 2010, and I think this was the most mind-boggling article I've ever read on education. It's the most daring education reform of all. It's by a lady called Diana Schenihal. It's her last name is S-E-N-E-C-H-A-L. She's got a website out there as well. But let me just read something from here. It's very powerful as I see it. It says that at its fullest and best, education prepares us to be with others and apart, to enjoy the life of the mind, to survive and prosper, to bring up new generations, to act with integrity and conscience, to pursue useful and interesting work, and to participate in civic and cultural action and thought. I thought this was really strong in terms of what she presented in this whole article. And she writes it very nicely. It's a long article. It's actually almost like a research paper, but it's worth reading. Gives a new dimension to education and the purpose purpose of learning in our lives.
Thank you so much.
Was that website ASP, A as in Apple, S as in Sam, P as in pig.org?
Yeah, that's right, AFT.org. Okay. Yes, and the two people I actually mentioned, one is a professor at University of Virginia. His name is Daniel T. Willingham. He's got a website out there as well. He writes beautifully. He's done a lot of research with K-12 type of education. And the other person also is Diana. Her last name is S-E-N-E-C-H-A-L. And this article is also there on our website in a PDF format.
Thank you. Yeah.
Sure, you're welcome.
Great. It's wonderful to have those resources. It reminds me of, I read an article earlier this week about the brain and how we learn, and it talked about bilingual children and how people, and even older adults, but especially children who were raised bilingual, have different brain structure because of the need to translate and think in two different paradigms and then bridge those paradigms, which is what I say is the quintessential characteristic of an edgewalker, to be able to think in one worldview and another and to see the interconnections and to be able to move seamlessly between the two. And we don't teach kids how to do that at all. We don't teach adults how to do that. Mm-hmm. And I do think having a spiritual practice or to be value-centered in some way, to have some sense of mission and purpose, all of those things help create a context for that kind of learning that it's a much higher level of operating in the world more effectively than the kind of machine model method we've used for education and even for managing in organizations. And there is a better way, and it's emerging. And I love this reference to the children, and I mean they are the seeds of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So anything that we can do to help them be more fully what human beings are capable of being is just a very precious thing. Joy, you mentioned that you raised your children this way, and I'd love to hear any examples you could describe of how your children who are grown now, how do you see them as young adults, and how is it for them in the world having been raised this way? Are they seen as weird and different, or are they seen as, you know, are they able to be effective in kind of the old paradigm world? What's it like for them? And what are some of their capabilities that other peers their age might not have?
Let's see. I think that the three of them are all really different, and having their gifts and their challenges. I think our oldest daughter, Melissa, is wonderfully adept at seeing the big picture, scanning quickly to understand, all of the emotions involved in a situation, both being able to be subjective, objective. I think she's good at navigating both, adults, peers, children. I think she's wonderful at being able to be in relationship with people of all ages. And translating information when talking from children to adults to whatever. So I think that she's skilled at that. I think she's dancing through the world beautifully. currently working at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. and on an internship and just loving her role there. And then Serena, I think she is challenged the most. I think that she really sees herself as a leader. I think she's a little bit more challenged in terms of feeling a little bit more isolated, in that she's so far advanced from her peer group that she gets really challenged by her young age and not being able to do as much in the world as she's capable and ready for doing. She's in Milan, Italy right now for her senior year of high school with the Rotary Club. So she's being an edgewalker in terms of learning multiple languages. Here's an example of Serena taking things somewhere. She was expressing some of her frustrations, as I guess they had some guest lecturers at her school in Italy, and maybe it's philosophy classes in English or combining different subjects, and they were talking about Jonah and the whale. I don't know the whole story as it's told, but I'm going to tell it as she was saying it, was that Jonah was choosing to go off of the boat to keep the other people alive and went into the mouth of the whale. And this is Serena's comments about it, and that going into that darkness, which Serena was relating to, was Jonah's need to really get honest with himself in order to find his light. And Serena was so touched by the whole subject and the story and was so frustrated that she was the only one in a room of 60 kids that wanted to elaborate it and talk about it, and was right away equating it to her trip to Italy was like going into the belly of the whale, and her really just processing it for days about what that meant for her and what the darkness was like, and her comparing her first 2 months. She's recognizing that she doesn't have a lot of memory of her first 2 months in Italy, and which was September and October of this year, which she was comparing to was being a two-year-old. She knows she was a two-year-old and she doesn't have much memory of it. And she was correlating in that maybe there's some correlation between when she was two-year-old, she didn't have language yet, and her first 2 months in Italy, she didn't have language of the environment she was in yet. So this is all the places that she takes something that she learns in a few minutes, but then feels really frustrated that her peers don't want to drop into it with as much depth or excitement. So I feel like I think she's using her skills in where she really recognizes that she's a leader, that she has a passion to give back into the world. And maybe I think there's this timing of her just feeling this frustration of when and how, but trying to figure it out.
Saying, am I the only one who sees this?
Yeah, I think she really struggles with that. And she's also, like, I think that Melissa has a little bit more ease of, oh, where are my peers at? I can meet them there and or I can go here. And Serena, like, if her peers are doing something she doesn't value or agree with, she just doesn't do it, right? And she doesn't feel the need to. So I think she ends up, because her value system, she's so passionate to it, she can feel more isolated. But I feel like even Serena's been, over the course of this exchange in Italy, of course she's going through just roller coasters of her emotions, but I also feel like she has so much tools in her toolbox to not only navigate the emotional roller coaster, but to just find intense richness and keep growing herself through it. And so, I feel really, my kids inspire me. And they inspire me by being on it's that kind of, just some is greater than the parts kind of thing. I gave them some, more than maybe what I was offered, but where they sprang, took a springboard into is just really inspiring.
It's wonderful to hear the stories of how they are in the world. It's those are the stories that give us hope.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
They do give me hope.
Yeah.
Judy, it's Eric in Toronto. I, not having ever met Ellis and knowing anything about him, I would love to hear the seed planting that Johnny Appleseed represents as well as the work that he's doing, if I may be so bold.
You read my mind, Eric. Thank you.
That's a great question. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, I was born in the spring solstice, and so
birthday was two days ago. Yeah, 2 days ago.
Happy birthday.
So this business of planting or something comes to my mind every time that comes around, sort of like a New Year's kind of an experience. This idea that a fresh new season is opening up. My birthday this year was a new decade, and so it feels even more like a threshold of a new period. And it's funny to me how later in life, there's a persisting notion or feeling of new birth. I'm surprised by that. I never expected to live this long, much less have a cyclical or repeating feeling of beginning again and again and again and again. And now our time down here together, Judy and I, for the last few years, has really been surprising. It wasn't something that we planned as much as something that unfolded for us. And so all of this time that we've had down here for these 3 years has been beginning of a new life, and has been blooming and blooming and blooming. And now we've moved into this house this August, and this spring is the first time we're literally putting some plants in the ground. And Saturday we're inviting a lot of the neighbors that we've known to come by and brainstorm about our garden with us. So it's very much on our mind, literally and figuratively. I'm just amazed by it, and don't feel that the things that are blooming are things that I planted. I feel that there are things that are erupting, and I'm just amazed by them. So it's been springtime at a time that I would have guessed would be an autumn period in my life. So I have a lot of prayers of gratitude and a lot of consciousness of gratitude. I find myself noticing the things that are growing and blooming and being amazed at how we eat them. They're integrated into our bodies and they become us and flow through us and back out of us. And, I guess I'm better off when I'm speechless about it.
I wouldn't agree with that. Oh, that's a beautiful sharing. Thank you very much. Anything else that you want to add to that? Well, that, you know, you've talked about the literal garden. Are there metaphorical seeds that you're planting in your life right now?
I don't know. I am. I've been feeling for a few years that sort of path is unfolding in front of me, and I need to make myself available to what is emerging. And so it hasn't felt like you know, planting seeds connotes to me more of making a plan and scheduling seasons and so forth. But I've been more feeling like being in the moment, actually.
It seems like almost like a metaphor of foraging or wandering through the woods and noticing the berries and, you know, not having to plant anything because it's all there already. It's just the seeing of it.
No, I think I prefer the, you know, we've been talking about the literal garden, the benefits and the pros and cons of making a plan. And part of the literal garden is planted now because we didn't wait for a plan. You know, we've been talking to Emily about gardening a lot and about her gardening some. And she said, yeah, I didn't have, her garden is very nice. And she said, I didn't have any plan. I just kept doing it. And that is what life feels like to me right now, just doing the thing that's at hand. Mm. And then looking back, you know, there's a lot of our literal garden that's planted that way, and there's a lot of our figurative blooming that's unfolded that way. So I'm you know, when seeds and seedlings come into my hand, I'm putting them in the ground, but I haven't got any plan for the garden.
Thank you. Yeah, I can. It reminds me of one time when I was first starting Spirit at Work, and And someone said to me, a very young man in his early 20s, who was so excited about spirit at work, and he said, you've got to get together the strategic plan, and you've got to, you know, like, what are you going to do a year from now and 5 years and 10 years from now? And you've got to map it all out and follow your plan. And I said, no, actually, that's not the way I live anymore. I just ask for God's guidance. And then I'm shown what I need to do next. And when we talk about Emily in our garden, Emily will clear a space, and then one of her other gardening friends might give her more plants than she needs for her own yard, and she'll bring some others and just kind of plant them in our yard. And it just sort of unfolds. And it's a thing of beauty, or it will be, we hope. But it's a way of living that's different than the traditional, like I was talking about earlier, hoeing the rows and planting the seeds. Thank you for sharing that.
I think there's always a balance between action and being, you know, and some of the gardening needs action and some of it needs being. And like one of the being part of my garden that always surprises me is when I get these volunteer flowers or volunteer plants that just show up that I know I didn't plant, but there they are, like, you know, showing their glorious display. And other parts of the garden take, you know, action if I really want it to also thrive, right? And so I think there's that balance of action and being.
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I like that. That was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Along with what you said, Judy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, we're just near the end of the call, so I want to give each of you a chance for any last comments. First of all, let me make an announcement that our call next month, let me just pull this up. Next month, the call is on April 26th, and the topic that I'm suggesting is vision questing or visioning. We can change that if someone else has another idea. But I chose that because we have Tom Anderson is coming to Fayetteville on April 13th to run a vision questing workshop for our students at the university. And so it's kind of on my mind that April's a wonderful month for vision questing. But if there's another topic, please suggest that either now or by email. And I'm happy to do whatever you'd be interested in.
Judy, is this Tom Anderson of the Gallup Group?
Say that again?
Is it Tom Anderson of the Gallup Group, the gentleman who actually wrote the book Strength Finder?
No. I forgot what the name of his book is, but it's around finding purpose in your life. But he's not part of the Gallup Group. He's from Missouri. So, I think that's my only announcement. And I do have a closing quote, but let me turn it over to you for any other closing questions or comments. That if you want to say something, please use this time now.
Thank you.
I appreciate, Judy, where you came to, and Ellis as well, leading us there, of just the doing that which is in front of us. It seems to be the issue in my world right now is the driver within to say, should be doing something other than what I'm doing or what's in front of me out of some fear or concern that if I don't, I won't be accomplishing what I need to or doing the right thing. And I think part of my contribution, my seed planting in thought and consciousness right now is if I can really listen to what the next thing is and slow down to be with that, that it will help others vibrationally, energetically, in thought and prayer to do do the same. And it's something I hear a lot of people questioning right now is, do I need to keep driving or can I stop and just do that which I feel moved or called to do? So I appreciate the reminder, and it's definitely what I'm working with right now. And it feels great. I just am so rich to be able to just do that which is the next thing in front and take the worry and concern off the table for the moment, even though it's in the back of my mind. But times it's just to say, this is a time for faith and trust that what is next is enough.
Eric, I just so resonate with your articulation of that. That goes beyond even what my thinking hearing has been tonight, and I really appreciate that. I'm you know, in the doing and being, I tend to emphasize much more the doing and making stuff happen kind of out of a fear that if I don't, nothing will ever happen, instead of the trust that life is supposed to be gentler than that, and that you know, there's been a time in my life where I always knew I would trust that I only would know the next step. I never knew the whole picture, but I would always know the next step. And when I lived like that, there was so much more flow than when I feel like I've got to make those, you know, do that strategic plan and know what's happening next year, 5 years and 10 years.
No, I like that, Judy. That's so revealing, actually. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you. Anyone else have a closing comment for tonight?
I think I'll pay more attention this week to either any, like, volunteer things growing in my garden I haven't noticed metaphorically. like what seeds are in my hand that I haven't even realized. So I think I'm just going to choose to open my eyes.
Thanks, Joy.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I'm going to close then with a quote that was in the newsletter announcing this call from Chris Sigillo, who wrote Keepers of the Garden. As great as learning is, it is important to realize that knowledge is meaningless unless we apply what we have learned. The seeds of knowledge will blow away in the wind unless they are planted in our everyday life. The seedlings must be tended regularly by watering and weeding if they are to bloom. Then the fall winds will blow the seeds of the blooms to new areas in hopes of more widespread growth. We are merely keepers of the garden. Thank you all for being on the call tonight. This has been wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you all, and thank you, Judy.
Thank you, Judy.
All right, God bless you. Bye-bye.
Blessings. Bye.